This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, and you can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats, the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Welcome into the show, everybody. Glad to have you this afternoon. Got some news going on here in White Sox world. A couple of players electing free agency, a new arm in the mix in Justin Dunn, signed to a minor league deal. And, of course, the big headline news, Garrett Crochet won Comeback Player of the Year in the American League. We'll get to that in just a minute. But that's not even all. That's not even the bulk of the show this afternoon. Ryan Fuller was named director of hitting for the White Sox. That was last week. We spent a lot of time talking about this position and that guy, as I hope he'll be pretty impactful for the organization in the coming years and hopefully immediately as well. We've talked a lot, and a lot of other people have talked quite a bit about what the White Sox have been able to do from a front office standpoint in adding Brian Bannister over the last calendar year plus here. He's the director of pitching for the White Sox. And over the last year, to be fair, over the last couple of years, and really kind of, hitting the gas quite a bit here with Bannister in the fold, the White Sox have been a pretty good source of pitching development. Now, over the last 2 years, that's really started to run with guys like Noah Schultz and Grant Taylor and Mason Adams and, you know, all of the guys, those are just minor league guys, all the other guys that we saw get up to the big leagues this year, like Jonathan Cannon, Kai Bush, Davis Martin's return, the whole thing. I mean, there are a lot of arms, a lot of interesting arms in this organization. Oh, you know what? I'm just going to do this for myself. It's a pet peeve that I have about my own. Frazier Ellard, like, that's a development win. No, he's not a starter. He's a lefty. He throws hard and might, you know, have platoon split issues. But getting Frazier Ellard to the bigs and having him pitch the way he did, especially down the stretch last year, I mean, that's a big development win for the White Sox here over the last 12, 16 months. So I think you put that in the left-hand column as well. Anyway, Fuller, coming over from Baltimore and now the director of hitting for the White Sox, gave a press conference with White Sox beat reporters on Thursday earlier this week. And I took some audio from that press conference, some really interesting stuff from Fuller. I try not to put a lot of stock in anybody winning a press conference. And that's not because it's not important. Sometimes it is. And some press conferences are more important than others for organizations, not just the White Sox, but, you know, any sports organization, any team, to go ahead and win, right? You introduce a new general manager. You introduce a new manager. You introduce your new franchise quarterback, you know, whatever, stuff like that. It's important to win a press conference. But at the end of the day, and I think this town knows it perhaps better than others, the press conference is great, and you like to get that W for the organization, for the fans, for the process, you know, the whole thing. But at the end of the day, it's a results-based business. Sports is a results-based business. So what Ryan Fuller and Chris Getz and Josh Barfield and Brian Bannister on the pitching side of things are all going to be able to do in terms of putting a better product on the field, producing the kinds of development that we haven't seen over the last couple of years in White Sox uniforms, that's going to be the way we judge what this organization, this front office, this hire of Ryan Fuller all means to the White Sox in 2025 and beyond. Now, all that said, I, full disclosure, liked a lot of the answers that Fuller had for White Sox beat reporters in the press conference a couple of days ago, and we're going to play some of them for you in just a little bit here on the show. I will give you a little bit of a teaser and admit some of my own bias, right? A lot of you know that before I got into sports media, I was a high school English teacher for just a little bit. I'm not entirely sure what subject Ryan Fuller taught or subjects Ryan Fuller taught while he was a high school teacher and high school baseball coach. But the transition from high school teacher to, you know, whatever your next career is, like, that's a soft spot for me. That's awesome. And we'll play a little bit later on in the show an answer that Fuller gave to how being Vinny Duber, a CHGO, asked the question, how did being a high school teacher help you in your arrival as director of hitting for the White Sox? And, you know, when Vinny asked the question, I half expected Fuller to give, you know, kind of a rote answer or just, you know, something somewhat cute or whatever. He did not. And quite frankly, Fuller's answer to that question and relating it all the way to Major League Baseball players, minor leaguers and major leaguers, was maybe one of the more impressive moments for me in that press conference. And again, I've admitted my biases to you, but I think it is kind of a pretty cool thing to hear Fuller talk about his own experiences as a high school teacher and how they relate, how those experiences relate to coaching big league ball players even today. That's for a little bit later on in the show. I want to get back to some of the headliner stuff that we saw here over the last week. Congratulations to Garrett Crochet and to Chris Sale, for that matter. Both White Sox, at least former White Sox and Chris Sale, and Crochet having worked with the White Sox over the last couple of years, both were named Comeback Players of the Year in the NL and AL this year. Sale having pitched for the Atlanta Braves and pitching incredibly well as everybody else in that rotation seemed to go down. Sale was the guy who bounced back from injuries after being traded from the Red Sox to the Braves and was Chris Sale. I mean, it just was Chris Sale. It was really impressive to watch him pitch in 2024. It looked like it was 2014 in some ways. Garrett Crochet is the 2024 American League Comeback Player of the Year, announced at All-MLB Weekend in Las Vegas. I don't think this show will go over, but the first and second teams were released by MLB as well. The White Sox on those teams, unfortunately, even with Crochet. But the award that Crochet did win has been presented annually since 2005 to one player in each league has reemerged on field during the season. Liam Hendricks won the award for the White Sox just last season. Jim Thome won the award in 2006 while a White Sox player. So they have a history, the White Sox do, of winning this award. And it's a little bit nebulous, especially with Hendricks last year having pitched, not much at all in 2023, but he did get back on the field after having beaten non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That qualifies you, as I consider it. Crochet, as you know, 6-12 with a .358 earned run average, 32 starts. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. 140 innings, more than 140 innings. And because he tallied over that 140, no pitcher had more strikeouts per nine in the American League than Garrett Crochet did. Second in strikeout to walk ratio in the American League. Fourth in total strikeouts in the AL. Sixth in whip. Ninth in opponents' average against. All of that, despite the fact that his workload and really even to a certain degree performance over the second half of the season was not the same as in the first half. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, and we've gone over the Garrett Crochet of everything here for months now because it's been such a fascinating thing to watch, such an impressive thing to watch for Garrett Crochet. Made the All-Star team for the first time in his big league career and is truly the bright spot of the 2024 White Sox season. Now, as it regards Crochet, congratulations on the hardware, my man. We have seen his name pop up in a couple of different trade rumors here over the last few weeks. The Mets are apparently interested in the services of one Garrett Crochet. That got reported, I want to say, earlier this past week. Let's see, Matt Aholt of the New York Post and John Heyman, both reporters there, have confirmed or reported the fact that the Mets have checked in about Crochet. We heard Bruce Levine of 670 The Score last week, and we alluded to the rumors that he'd been reporting or the reports that he'd been putting out there about this, that the White Sox are very much focused on getting bats back in a trade for Garrett Crochet, and I do not at all mean this as a knock. We knew that. I think you could expect that, especially since the trade of Dylan Cease in spring training last year brought back two arms
in Drew Thorpe and Jairo Iriarte, and one bat, Sammy Zavala, down there in the lower levels of the minors playing in the outfield, who had a tough season in 2024, but still young. The White Sox are in, and you'll hear Ryan Fuller talk about this a little bit in a few minutes. The White Sox are in desperate need of impact bats. The Red Sox have popped up as an interesting trade partner with the White Sox here. They've got four big-time prospects, all of them very close to the major leagues. Guys like Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell, Kyle Teal, a catcher who personally I think is an absolutely fantastic young player, and Marcelo Mayer, an infielder that many think will at least get the shot at sticking at shortstop for a little while here. It's entirely possible that Boston, whether they really want to push in for Garrett Crochet or not, would want to keep three of those four, maybe even all four. From what I understand, from what you hear around the industry, Roman Anthony, who's in a lot of places the top prospect in all of baseball, and if he's not, he's certainly in the top five, is borderline untouchable or basically untouchable from the Red Sox perspective. Could Garrett Crochet pry that loose? I'm not entirely sure, but I'd very much be willing to give it a shot if Chris Getz and the rest of the front office are indeed, as it seems, set on dealing Garrett Crochet at some point in the near future. Well, those are just some of the rumors that have popped up. There will be more. We know the Dodgers will be interested. We know some of the big hitters. Shoot, maybe even the Yankees could get involved in a conversation about Garrett Crochet. But I think this about the player and about the circumstances themselves, we can debate and probably will over the next couple of weeks, and certainly if and when it happens, the merits, the need, perhaps, of the White Sox trading Garrett Crochet. There is a good argument to be had on the other side of the ledger about signing Crochet to a long-term extension and building around the guy. Absolutely there is. There is a pretty good argument on the other side for dealing him with the years of control that he has left and the relative security that a team trading for Crochet would get in putting him in the rotation, as I'm sure whatever team that adds him would do. The thing about Crochet here, trading him in the offseason, as opposed to trading him at the deadline last year, is this. Because he's a player so young, so cheap, and I don't love using that word as it relates to player values and salaries and stuff, but let's just, I suppose at some point you got to call it like it is. He's cheap, and he's excellent. Any team could convince themselves to get in on this sweepstakes, not just the heavy hitters in terms of money. Your Mets, your Yankees, your Dodgers, so on and so forth. If you're the Milwaukee Brewers, you could make yourself a really good argument for trading for Garrett Crochet because you can support that salary in your payroll, in the Milwaukee Brewers payroll. The Orioles, who have new ownership now and seemingly is getting reinvested into the team but is yet to spend any prospect capital in acquiring players, any real big prospect capital. They did make some moves at the deadline last year, but none of the really big names. They could not only spend that prospect capital but also spend on Garrett Crochet, perhaps keeping him around for the extension that I'd mentioned just a few minutes ago. So, I don't know, this winter, obviously, this Crochet thing is going to be the thing for the White Sox in the next month or two. And when it happens, we'll spend a lot of time talking about it, about the players the White Sox get back if and when it happens. But I think there's no doubt about it that the appeal, with all teams having their records reset to zero, and even your small market, your mid-market, your lower dollar teams who are poised to compete, can make themselves a compelling argument for trading for Garrett Crochet for all the reasons we just listed. So, we'll be keeping our ears and our eyes open, I suppose. Yeah, open for both of them. That makes sense. And check it in on the rumors around Garrett Crochet one way or the other. When we come back on the other side of a break, Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting for the White Sox, spoke to White Sox beat reporters. Also let you know about two free agents leaving the White Sox, perhaps coming back, but definitely free agents for now, and a new arm in the mix for the White Sox, too. All that's next on White Sox Weekly.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And, of course, on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back in to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. You can celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with a White Sox party. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Mentioned at the outset of the show that new director of hitting for the White Sox, Ryan Fuller, over from the Orioles, spoke to White Sox beat reporters for the first time earlier this week. And I want to get to some of that audio here in segment number two of the show. But there are a couple more things to hit on, headlines that I want to get to here before we get to that audio. And it is good from a guy that should be pretty impactful or should have quite a bit of influence in how the White Sox get impactful over the next couple of years. But in case you missed it, a few headlines. Nicky Lopez and Sammy Peralta have elected free agency. Lopez was acquired by the White Sox from the Braves in a deal that sent Aaron Bummer to Atlanta. Five players coming back. Jared Schuster, Nicky Lopez, Braden Shoemaker. Oh, let's see if I can do them all. Riley Cowens, all of them part of the deal. Oh, and Michael Soroka, all part of the deal that brought Aaron Bummer to the Braves and Nicky Lopez to the White Sox. And it looks like that might be it for Nicky Lopez as a White Sox. Longtime Southsider, grew up a White Sox fan, as I'm sure you know. Was due about $5 million the next season. And, you know, considering the production that Lopez put up, despite the fact that he was pretty good defensively in a couple of different spots, you know, you look at what the White Sox could bring to bear, I suppose, in terms of young infielders. You've got Colson Montgomery, you've got Miguel Vargas, you've got Brian Ramos, you've got Brooks Baldwin, you've got whatever situation at first base you're looking to resolve as well. And that plays somewhat into that mix, but less so than some of the other guys I just mentioned. And I don't, you know, I'm not quite sure where Lopez would have fit in terms of playing time and in terms of salary demands, given the White Sox are likely to pare things down as they build things back up. Lopez could come back on a lower deal. He has elected free agency. He seemed to enjoy his time with the team. I know that he liked Grady Sizemore quite a bit. And while Grady will not be the manager in 2025, that'll be Will Venable, of course, you know, many expect Grady to stay along with the team. And he's spoken pretty highly, Nicky has, of the kind of revamped effort led by Chris Getz here over the last few months. So who knows? Entirely possible. Sammy Peralta, slow throwing lefty, kind of a favorite of the White Sox pitching infrastructure, a guy that was just kind of, you know, a little bit older and kind of running up against the options situation, kind of passed around through waivers a few times. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Peralta, who is 27, going to turn 28 at the beginning of next year, made his way back around to the White Sox at some point. He's got some funk to it. He certainly looks different than most other pitchers, and that has been something that Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz have tried to acquire in different places by whether it's picking up minor league free agents or, you know, guys in trade that don't necessarily have an evident fit in the spot they're leaving. And that brings us to Justin Dunn, a 6'2" right-hander about to turn, let's see, just turned 29 in September. He pitched for the Reds in 2022. That was his last big league time. He's bounced around from organization to organization since 2022. But Justin Dunn has been signed to a minor league deal by the White Sox here in the last week. He was first-round pick of the Mets in 2016, was a top prospect traded to Seattle along with Jared Kelnick in the Robinson Cano Edwin Diaz deal back in 2016, which I don't know why, but to me that feels like it was just the other day. It was definitely not. Dunn has been injured quite a bit. He has four full seasons of service time already, which means he'd get to five if he spends another, you know, pretty much full season there. So the options, three of them, and two seasons of club control left for a guy that's got a fairly decent strikeout rate at just under 20%, but a very high walk rate in about 133 2/3 career innings. Some decent stuff, and a guy that, you know, obviously the White Sox will invite on a minor league deal to camp and see if he can compete for a bullpen spot. That's the latest roster move by the White Sox. Now, let's get to the big stuff, or at least the future-focused stuff.
Ryan Fuller is the new director of hitting for the White Sox, and he spoke to White Sox beat reporters earlier this week. Two cuts here kind of right off the top, and, you know, I want to get right into this. He spoke a little bit about what getting on board has been like here over the last week, week and a half.
When Chris approached me about the position, it was very intriguing. And then the more people within the organization I got to talk to, the more and more excited I got. And it's been an amazing start to the first week of connecting with as many people as possible with the major league side, with the minor league side, our front office, research and development, and been really excited about the people I've met, the conversations we're talking about, and right now just trying to gather as much information I can about the White Sox and what we're doing here and find the pieces of where we can move this thing together to improve and also leverage the people we have and get the players better. So I see it as helping the players, obviously, but also empowering the coaches, meeting everyone in all different departments and being that catalyst to connect everyone together. Because obviously where we are today is not where we want to be in the future. And having a clear vision and roadmap to get there and having everybody on board will be key.
One of the questions that got asked to Fuller and has been asked to Will Venable, and I think will be asked to, any future additions either to the front office or really even to some players who are brought in via free agency are going to be, you know, what was it that sold you about the White Sox? You are coming to a team that lost 121 games this last year and is right there in a rebuild, and what has been so far a pretty consistent answer from Venable and now Fuller is the vision that Chris Getz and the rest of the front office have for building out this franchise the way they want to build it has been really impressive to candidates.
Chris is awesome. I look at what he's done over the last year being in charge, and each person that I've connected with, the people that he's brought in, get so energized talking with them. And it's clear that there's a vision here. There's a plan in place to get to where we want to be. And my goal is always playoff baseball, winning playoff series in Chicago, and getting a taste of that in a major league dugout is obviously very intoxicating. And that's where I want to be. So we have high goals. We know it's going to take a lot of effort and energy to get there, but it's very clear that Chris has a great vision and he's bringing really elite game-changing people on board.
Unlike Will Venable, who has been in a number of organizations, the Cubs, the Red Sox, and the Rangers, Fuller has only been a major league coach, or I should say a coach of any kind, minor leagues and major leagues, with the Baltimore Orioles. However, when he was asked what he saw in the 2024 White Sox offense, which was abysmal, he related it to some of the things he'd seen from his prior days in the minors with the Orioles.
I see it very similarly to the players that I had with the Orioles. It's a very young hitting roster, and with that, there's going to be some bumps along the way. But how can we support them? How can we give them a really simple and clear message every day where they feel like the work they're putting in can be carried out that night with their approach? And certainly young hitters come up, their behavior might be a little bit different from then what it was in AA, AAA, helping them understand who they are. And always it goes back to the basics, sticking with that process of getting a pitch over the heart, taking a good swing at it. The more often we could do that, the better we're going to be. So I know that's a very simple answer, but refining these approaches help these young guys really feel like they can be difference makers at the big league level. And they are in control with based off of what they come to the ballpark and work on every day. And if they have a really clear plan of attack going into their work every day and how they're going to attack the pitcher, good things are going to happen.
That really rings true, I think, when you go back to the story I told you last week and maybe you read in The Athletic when we knew Ryan Fuller was going to be this guy named to the director of hitting role. He along with some other coaches, implemented a procedure, a process with the Orioles that evaluated swing decisions for Orioles prospects at the time. He was working in AA at Bowie, if I remember correctly. And what it did was assess the quality of swing decision for a player on a given night. All the swing decisions. Like, if you lunged at a slider way outside the strike zone in a 2-0 count, but managed to, I don't know, somehow launch it to the wall in right and get a double out of things, great. You know, we love extra bases, and that worked out for us, and maybe it helped to win the ball game. But it was a bad swing decision, so you got downgraded on that. Did you take a mighty hack, you know, on 2-1 on a fastball right at the, you know, right in your happy zone? You know, did you swing and miss at that one, but you took a swing at that pitch in the right count? Yes. Okay, well, that's going to be a thumbs up or a smiley face or whatever emoji they were using to grade guys out, because they would get the grades via text. I think it was a star system, maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 stars. That would have been graded as a better swing decision than the double that you flared out into right off the plate and in a 2-0 count or something like that. I'm simplifying just a little bit here, but that makes sense to me. And that cut, you know, really makes me think about that kind of process, right? It's about the process. It's not necessarily about the results. Now, results win ball games, but better processes get you to better results more times than not. That's the bet in a 162-game season. One other question that Fuller was asked here before we get to a break, and we've got more from the new director of hitting for the White Sox when we come back, but one of the questions that got asked to him was about his role in helping to modernize the ball club as it regards, you know, different training practices, high-speed reps. We'll get to that on the other side. It's a fascinating answer about guys taking swings off the eye pitch. You know, that's the machine that replicates any spin and velocity that you can see in the big leagues to make it like you're facing that guy's stuff on that given day. This isn't that cut, but it's more about the overarching role he has in you know, kind of the modernization effort that Chris Getz is leading here.
Yeah, I can only speak on what I know, and that's my background, obviously, and very fortunate to have gone to Baltimore, learned from amazing people there, and got to have my hand in a lot of different areas of the hitting department as well. And the areas that I feel very confident in coming in and helping is we did a really good job of drafting really strong young hitters. And once we drafted them, getting them into the development system and helping them understand that the goal is not to be great at high A, double A, triple A. The goal from the start is to be a productive big leaguer for the major league team. So drafting well, developing well, and then at the major league side, helping acquire well. And very proud of what we did there, kind of becoming a destination for bounce back candidates, hitters that maybe haven't had the best years over the last couple of years, but getting them back to being really productive big leaguers and then getting them that next contract and helping us at the same time. So looking at the experience of the draft, development, and acquisition, I'm really looking forward to doing that at an even higher level with the White Sox.
That's new director of hitting, Ryan Fuller. We'll hear more from him when we come back. It's White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox fans, customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack. Get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. When we left you just a few moments ago, we were hearing from Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting for the White Sox. Comes over from the Orioles and has now moved from a coaching position to a director role for the White Sox. If you're just joining us, we heard some audio from him already and have more to come here. But in case you weren't aware or wanted to go back and listen or wanted to send the show to a friend, download the ESPN Chicago app. Each and every one of our White Sox Weekly episodes are downloadable on the ESPN Chicago app. It is awesome. You can listen to all of our programming here on ESPN 1000 right there on the app, including White Sox games if you're in the Chicagoland area. So certainly avail yourself of the technology. Use the app. Modernize your baseball listening like the White Sox are modernizing their approach to player development here with Ryan Fuller in the fold. There's a segue for you. Fuller last year was a co-hitting coach with the Orioles, a team that, though it faltered some in the second half, still amassed really good numbers in the second half. They were still major league average in terms of OPS. I think they were like 730 or something like that, which would have been 11th in baseball in the second half of the season. And in the first half of the year, I forget whether they were second or third in OPS, but they were, I mean, just fantastic. And it's an organization that's deep. It's so deep with prospective hitters that they're kind of running out of positions on the field to run some of those prospects out there, and that makes them, as much as anyone else in baseball, the kind of team that could trade with the White Sox for Garrett Crochet, if the White Sox are indeed going to trade Garrett Crochet. So I would guess, in fact, probably know, that Ryan Fuller was brought in because of what he can do for the White Sox in the years to come, right? The role he'll play in development, in analytics, in bridging the gap between players and numbers and all that other kind of stuff, and then the coaching aspect of it all. However, it's really convenient to have a guy who knows a lot of those minor leaguers in the Baltimore system as well as anybody if you are involved in conversations with that organization about potential hitters that you'd like back for Garrett Crochet. Is it the reason they hired him? No, absolutely not. That would be ludicrous because the chances that the Orioles are the team to make the trade are just as high or just as low, depending on how you want to look at it, as any other contender. Probably. I think the Orioles do have a lot of young players that you'd like to have on a roster, though, if you are trading a top-tier starter, which Garrett Crochet is. So maybe this pans out in a lot of different ways. All that said, though, there is a stress by the White Sox front office and their coaching staff to really have this, you know, this idea of how to hit, of how to pitch, of how the White Sox do this, that, and the other thing permeate from top to bottom, right? From the minor leagues all the way up through the major leagues, to have this kind of be an organizational identity. And you see that around baseball. For some organizations, that's been going on for a little while. For some organizations, they would tell you they invented the idea of it and had a cardinal way and a book and everything. And they would tell you over and over and over that they invented the game of baseball and hold this thing. That's just a It's fine. They got a book and everything. But it is important, right? I mean, jokes aside, it is an important thing. The consistency is key in a season that lasts 162 games at the big league level. Now, the other thing he mentioned, Fuller did, is his work with Marcus Temps, who is coming back as White Sox hitting coach, and that consistency is something that appealed to Fuller when applying for the job.
Yeah, speaking to consistency, it's key for these guys to develop relationships, and then someone like Marcus, he's been fantastic to work with so far. We've been on Zoom calls virtually every day, talking to each other, asking a lot of questions of what's going on, what can we make improvements to, how can I support you even more? And both of us talking about experiences, working with really high-level hitters, talking about what we can do as we look towards the player plans for the White Sox hitters going into 2025. So it's been great so far. We match up really well, and it's been a great working relationship so far, and I know it's one that we'll continue to work at moving forward.
I think that's pretty interesting, and, you know, it's worth questions. It's worth more questions, I should say, of course. The White Sox offense was very, very bad last year, but the work that Marcus Temps did, the reception that he had from players, the esteem that his bosses, superiors, peers all hold him in is pretty high, it seems. And he's coming back as the White Sox hitting coach in 2025, despite the numbers in 2024. Now, speaking to that consistency, it's going to be a theme here throughout some of the rest of what Ryan Fuller, the new director of White Sox hitting, is talking about here. He was asked a question, an interesting one too. How do you keep a consistent approach, right, or a consistent, I guess, teaching method when hitters are so individual, right? One guy's swing is not the other guy's swing, right? We've seen Giancarlo Stanton's swing is not Jose Altuve's swing, right? It was completely different things, and yet the messaging has to be consistent. So how does that work from Fuller's point of view? Take a listen.
Really, it comes down to the culture, and what I always try and do is these players have so much coming at them every day, and especially when they move from one level to the next, how can we create the same structure at each level? There's certainly going to be different challenges, but we want them to know, okay, when you get here, you're still working at the same times. We have the advanced meeting every day for preparing for the pitcher, the way we go about preparing for the pitcher in terms of game planning, the way we train, those things on a daily basis, while they can get overlooked, providing as much consistency for these players and what it looks like on a daily basis, but then at a higher level, what it looks like from a messaging perspective, being very clear on our expectations for the hitters, but at the same time, giving them a ton of support with everything we do.
So more on that, more on the approach that you're going to see, not approach, I should say, but the training methods that you're going to see from White Sox players. I thought this was a really fascinating question posed by James Fegan of SoxMachine.com to Fuller in the press conference on Thursday. You've heard about the iPitch machine, probably. You probably read about it. We certainly talked about it some here on White Sox Weekly during the season with a lot of pieces coming out. It's a high-tech pitching machine that has the ability of, you beep and you boop, you press the numbers on the keypad, and it'll spit out whatever pitch you input, right? So you can take the spin rate, the tilt, the access, the vertical rise, and all that kind of stuff of a, Justin Verlander fastball and put it in the machine, and the machine's going to throw you a Justin Verlander fastball or the slider that he was throwing last week or, whatever, so that in your pregame routines, you can face the stuff from the starting pitcher that you're going to see that day. It's fairly high tech. It's been around a little bit longer than most think, but it is certainly something a lot of teams are leaning into here. Fuller was asked about what he thinks about those, calling it high-speed reps, right? Facing game stuff all the time, or at least much more often than your batting practice fastballs that we see at about 4 o'clock before a 7:10 start.
Definitely very important. We know that the closer reps we get to game-like speeds, representative training, it's more likely to transfer into the game. But this is where feel and awareness for the coaches is so important. We're not just going to put someone in a situation where they're going to fail over and over again. We want to equip them with the skills, the training that allows them to level up. And when I talk about level up, these guys love playing video games. When you play a video game, you start at level one. And when you beat the level one boss, you go to level two. You don't jump to level 30 right away. So it's going to have that feel of making sure these guys are building their skill every day. But as we build that skill, we're going to look to problem solve. We're going to look to find really messy solutions at times, because we know that the more learning we can do, the more challenging environments that we could provide for these hitters in the context of where they're currently at with their skill, the more likely they're going to have success when the lights come on at 7 p.m. each night.
You might chuckle a little bit about Fuller's insistence on the whole, kind of video game approach or gaming the training of this, but it's real. It is absolutely real. I can attest to it. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if in spring training, a guy like James Fegan or Scott Merkin or Vinny Duber, or Lamont Pope or Darryl Van Scow, one of the beat writers, has a big story about how Ryan Fuller has gamified the hitting approach of the White Sox based somehow on Clash of Clans. I'm just saying that's a popular game in the clubhouse in different major league settings. I'm not saying which one. But if you could somehow relate the work that you got to do as a hitter to Clash of Clans, I think you could go a long way to reaching a whole bunch of different hitters. Anyway, one of the other questions asked to Fuller, I think, is one that gets played up quite a bit in some areas of the country when it comes to Major League Baseball and not so much others. The White Sox, unfortunately, have a very hitter-friendly park. When I say unfortunately, it means it's unfortunate because the White Sox didn't take advantage of that hitter-friendly environment. And Fuller was asked whether the park, the home park of a ball club, affects his plan or planning at all when it comes to the long term.
Great question. It's one I love. I think about the identity of really good teams, and one that I really pride myself on helping create is a team that's dynamic. And it's whatever challenges are presented that night, we're going to have the skills to match up accordingly. If that's a guy top of the zone with ride at the top, we're going to be able to flatten out. If it's a sinker slider east-west guy, we're going to be able to scoop. But on top of that, the nights where we need to score 11, we're going to slug. That's what the game's calling for that night. If it's a really tight ball game and one run's going to do it, we're going to have the opportunity to get a guy on first base, steal a bag, hit situationally, score that run. So don't try and dictate based off of each ballpark we're playing at. It's whatever is called for, we're going to be trained to execute.
And certainly that ballpark you're playing at is going to have an effect on what kind of game you're playing, what kind of game you end up playing that night. But I think Fuller's point here is, and yes, it is a little like those are the best laid plans, right? We want a team that's going to be able to play in all sorts of different games because we have all sorts of different skill sets in it. Well, that takes a while to build, and you're not immediately going to be that team. But Fuller's perspective there, I think, is at least for me, pretty well regarded. One of the questions that Scott Merkin of MLB.com asked, I thought, was led to a really interesting answer. You know, all year we saw Luis Robert Jr., Eloy Jimenez when he was with the White Sox, and other guys too, just kind of stuck in funks. Fuller was asked how he goes about getting hitters out of funks. Take a look.
Certainly going to treat everybody as an individual. That's what they are. We're going to find those skills and attributes that make them have the superpowers that they have and try and leverage the areas to make them even better. But the overarching philosophy that I always go by, and I think you'll hear it from a lot of hitting coaches, is one, going in with a great game plan so we can control the zone. That's kind of the line of scrimmage where that battle starts. And if we're swinging at pitches over the heart of the plate, you're going to make contact. And when you make contact on pitches over the heart, you're going to have those damaged balls that are going to be high-end exit velo on a line in the air. But everyone says that. What do I believe in? How do you make it come to be each day with what you do? And as hitting coaches, there's so much outside of your control. But really the key phases that I see is three areas: educating our coaches and players at a really high level, helping them understand what they do very well, what success looks like, educating them every day, and then two, how we train. This is definitely something in my past with the Orioles that we really leveraged. We were not the most resourced team, but we loved training at a higher level than everyone else. So making sure we're building our skill, but then testing it every single night to make sure we're game ready and battle tested. And then the third piece, game planning. And it's especially one thing Marcus and I have talked about so far, refining the approaches, help guys understand what their strengths are, where they need to look in the zone, and making sure that they feel matchup proof regardless of who's on the mound each night.
Love that. He kind of makes it feel like he's got a holistic approach to this thing. Last one for you, and I told you this might be my favorite. This is how his experience as a high school teacher relates to his current job as White Sox hitting director.
My time as a teacher is one I cherish. I never thought I would be a major league hitting coach, let alone director of hitting, when you look just, you know, a decade ago when I was teaching in Connecticut. But the skills that I acquired being a teacher, when you're a teacher, you have almost every kid coming in the classroom wishing they were anywhere else on the world than sitting in a classroom with you. So it's how can I connect with the students the same way with the hitters. I want it to be an environment that they come into and they are excited about coming into every day, where they know they're going to be challenged, but there's going to be a high level of support there. Taking complex information and making it very simple and actionable, that's what I pride myself on, and that's what I look forward to working with our coaches, to have the resources, the information, to make a really clear plan of attack for not just the hitters, but our students, and really treating it as we are teachers of the game of baseball, the game of offense, and really excited to continue doing that, especially with our presentation skills and talking to them every day.
Absolutely love it. We got to skip to a break, almost out of time here on White Sox Weekly. We'll be back to close things up in just a few on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly, I'm Connor McKnight. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Big thank yous to Pass Out. Thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer on the other side of the glass. Thanks to Ryan Fuller. Great press conference with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week, and we got to listen to a lot of his thoughts on the state of the White Sox from the hitting perspective. I think that's going to be the big conversation for us, you and I, over the next couple of weeks. We'll get back next Saturday to kind of the review preview series. We tackled first base a little bit already, just kind of what the White Sox should get up to here over the next couple of months as it regards first base. Then Will Venable got hired, Ryan Fuller got hired, and put the brakes on that series a little bit. I want to get back into it because now that we know what that White Sox hitting infrastructure looks like from a better perspective, I think getting some ideas on potential returns for a Garrett Crochet trade if it happens this winter, better ideas on what kinds of hitters the White Sox need to bring in helps shape the future-looking prospects of each position in 2025. So that's what we'll be up to in next week's show. Not sure exactly what position we'll head to next. Maybe third? But we'll see. Tune in next week. We'll get to it then. I'm Connor McKnight. Thanks so much for listening to White Sox Weekly. You've got ESPN 1000.